from the looking at it. You know, what's the real difference?
Seems like we seekers think we're going to get something if we can just not be caught up in.
We're going to get something. What's that?
The first state that you talked about?
Yeah.
Where you're not caught up in it?
Yes.
It seems like if you're a seeker, that, like, you're convinced that would give you something. You're not caught up in it. And you're asking what the difference between just not believe in yourself, not believe in the story, or just completely caught up in it. What is the difference?
Not caught up in your story. In other words, in both cases, I see relief of my personal story. In the one case, it's just the relief of the personal story. In the other case, it's sort of a substitution of some external story that you get caught up in. You
know? Distraction, kind of.
Yeah, but in both cases, the personal story is gone. So in other words, it's not just the lack of the personal story, right? You know, it's something more than that. I mean, don't you think? Because in one case, it's another story. So it's like...
Oh, wait, you're equating the watching the movie with what? I missed a piece.
Same as being caught up in your thoughts and drama of a story and a person.
Of your life.
Well,
not because
exactly
if you're watching a movie, you're not caught up.
You're not caught up.
You're out of it.
What I'm saying is, when people talk about realization and getting beyond personal stuff that's going on, the constant referential bullshit that, you know, seems like we're inclined to endure, you know, but when that goes away, there's this, if you will...
Empty nest syndrome. Sure, the house sure is quiet.
No more troubled teenager here.
So in that case, the personal self, you could say, is gone. And in the other case, you're watching a movie. The personal self is gone.
Right.
But there's some other thing going on instead.
Yeah.
So that seems to sort of just take over in the personal self, you know?
That's why there's free cell.
I've done free cell.
That's a good one. Spider solitaire.
Yeah. Four suits.
Yeah, four suits. I love four suits.
Oh, there's no other way.
No other way. Once you go four suits, you can't go back.
Once you've gone four suits, where do you think you're going?
Maybe I just meant to verbalize it to sort of explain it to myself.
Did we help? I hope.
I kind of like the thought of the analogy of I'm watching my life and all this and I'm all wrapped up in it is no more significant than when you go watch a movie and you're all wrapped up in it and you lose everything else but that. It's the same thing.
But it's so novel that, you know.
Well, the movie feels novel. The day-to-day life crap feels, you know, just boring as dog shit, but...
That's why we envy the enlightened, because they appear to be enjoying novelty.
Yeah.
And movie stars.
Yeah, and if you get an enlightened movie star, holy cow.
It's all the same shit.
Yeah.
Huh. Could be.
The enlightened are celebrities?
It's just very few.
Yeah. What else are they?
Yeah.
I guess they're the rock stars of enlightenment.
And just to kind of
icons of
integrate and sort of flip it a little bit, and you guys have probably been through all this, so you don't have to spend a lot of time in it. But speaking of enlightenment celebrities, I listened to a YouTube interview by Google's interviewing Eckhart Tolle. And then there's
it's a lot of humility in that room.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask, why don't you like Eckhart Tolle?
Don't get me started.
Does he look like E.T.?
No, he's not important.
Well, yeah, he's a little funny.
Actually, that's the only reason we like him.
I see that's cute.
Leprechaun bastard for the bill.
I've always liked the leprechaun bastard reference. But I don't like all the stuff that goes on around him. I mean, I get Zachary Toy TV stuff all the time. It's all the salesmanship that seems to go on.
Well, that was my assumption, but I wasn't sure.
But he really turned me on.
He's a sidebar, really. You know.
Should I talk about that? Is it that you have a thing for E.T. or is it really?
I like this.
Did E.T. also turn you on? Because that would
kind of.
My son is 32 years old and I still have his little E.T. sweatshirt from when he was like three.
Aww. All right. Well, we have a bunch of E.T. files or something in the room. I don't know what you call
it. It was so cute. E.T. from who used to play the Atari E.T. video game where he used to go collect crazy pieces.
I think I might have been happy to be sharing real, very real obsession with E.T. that I did not know about until now. It's clear.
I think of him every time I eat Reese's Pieces.
Oh, that's good. I thought you were going to say. It's like, is he banging above your bed? Or?
All right.
Sorry.
A straight note. There's a question on the table.
This was serious.
What's the issue with that part?
You know, obvious stuff and the things that go around and all.
We're working through some serious stuff.
The brief interview I listened today, it was like, yeah, okay. I mean, it was, you know, commonsensical at a particular level. Like, what's the problem?
Yeah. He's fine. The more interesting thing to look at is one's interest and delight in novelty, or in valuing, let's say, an enlightened person. Were there any envying them or being curious about their experience? And one of the things you could say punctuates, right, the appearance of a so-called enlightened person, were there any, is novelty, right? And we are somewhat bereft of novelty. We easily get caught up in our own consciousness and content and the waveforms of the universe that we imagine we live in as a, you know, constituent, as a being, and we don't often touch it or feel it, but that certain kind of grief or sorrow is always present in us, not as a bad thing, but true as a poignancy.
Who didn't cry when they heard the little guy go, E.T. phone home? We all got it. Yeah. At some level, we all got it.
Yeah. That novelty that we might envy in another or be on the lookout for ourselves is, curiously, what this already is. We are observing, feeling, living in absolute novelty.
So it's a deferral, then, of putting one's, giving oneself over to the enlightenment celebrity du jour, sort of.
Well, it's both. It's for seekers, right? It's a celebrity event, right? Just like how many people were hanging outside of Dave Letterman's theater when Angelina Jolie was on the scene.
Yeah.
You know, it was absolute mayhem of paparazzi and whatever. People don't tend to do that around Adyashanti, they do it around the Beatles.
Among certain circles, maybe.
When you see people line up to receive Amici coming out of her van into a hall, that's a, you know, like a red carpet event. Yeah.
So is it the enlightened person, is it worse than the rock star?
Well, the enlightened person, of course, is somewhat of a myth. And if we do,
wouldn't the rock star be a myth? Wouldn't Angelina Jolie be a myth?
Well, yes. Well, of course. I mean, all the excitement that's created in oneself or a group of people in the presence of a human being that has rock star, right, capacity, is, I mean, it's a phenomenon, right? Or let's say you went to see the Pope and you could get close. I don't know about this current Pope, whether anyone feels a certain affinity for him, or Ratzinger certainly didn't attract anyone's, you know, affinity or affection. Right. But prior to Ratzinger, you know, what was that Pope? Who was the Polish Pope before Ratzinger? Have they canonized him yet? They're working on it. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, a number of people, had a profound, you know, spiritual experience in his company, even if he was just waving like the royals do from the Pope Mobile.
Kind of like that Wag the Dog movie where they just kind of invent a story and made a war.
Well, all of this is that, right? I mean, look at the nature of your familiar persona. Right? What makes you you, the way you glide through a day as you? I mean, aren't you Wag the Dog? Yeah.
Well, it does seem, though, that even though it is like deferring your own experience by somebody else's experience kind of higher than your own.
Well, there's that. But look how we do that internally.
Yeah.
We do that internally by paying, you might say, undue attention to ourselves, to our own thought stream. Hmm. We fetishize ourselves. We create, you know, celebrities of ourselves. By orienting to presence through the filter of right familiarity.
Yeah, we're either celebrities or we're terrible people.
We can go
the span of an hour, maybe.
Or quicker.
Or quicker.
Yeah, that's right.
And yet those people do evoke something, maybe, you know, compared to the mediocre Pope like Ratzinger, like nobody cared about that guy.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Right. Well, yes, I mean,
rock star ability,
whether it's on the stage or at the Pope Mobile or being interviewed by Oprah or leading a retreat, is so. It's real.
Or even in a regular office area or regular circles of people that you come across, some people are just more charismatic than others.
There's plenty of those kinds of folks right here at our own lovely Pebble Hill. Naturally charismatic individuals. Some seek for attention and some just naturally draw.
That's it.
Attention. I was watching a Lou Reed concert from, let's say, 1984. Mm-hmm. And he was just dripping with rock star ability. Mm-hmm. And this was a 2-hour long concert. Wow. I mean, he went through a song list, right, this long and just kicked the shit out of it.
Yeah.
And you were like, he's a god. He's like a rock god. And it, yeah, it's true. He just can do it. And, you know, his vocals were not harmonious.
So are you getting rock star godness by, you know, hero worship of Lou Reed? Or?
No, I think that if you are enjoying the celebration of a worthy recipient of your affection, you're having a good time.
Yeah.
Well, the same would be true of Eckhart Tolle then, right?
No question about it. Yeah.
No, he's a...
Yeah, you're having a good time. We think that we're experiencing name and form, which is external to us. That's how we construct the universe that we drive around in, that we shower in, that we see clients in, that we hide from, that we attention seek in, that we do what we do. We think we're living in an externally relevant, three-dimensional environment, and that we're experiencing objects and subjects external to ourselves that evoke, right,
yeah,
qualities in ourselves through which we relate, mostly by paying little attention. Right? Mostly we wander through three-dimensional space, were there any, kind of in the comfort zone or discomfort zone of our own mind, picking out things from the grocery shelves that we want to take home. But we really don't notice all that much. We do this with each other, with our partners, with Free Cell. We do it with celebrities. Our consciousness is quite the slut. It'll just sleep around and not pay attention to anyone with whom it's, you know, consummated. That's how we roll. And that, but curiously, that same kind of, disdain that we have for everyone and everything that's kind of impinging on our, you know, private time, we also treat ourselves that way. This kind of, call it lazy eye consciousness, can treat its own radiant nature in the same way that can discard strangers at the Red Nurse.
Hmm.
And we
even
do.
Even worse.
Well, yes, of course. It can,
you know,
also
like
be quite the bully.
You don't measure up. You're not good enough.
All that, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if it were just disinterested disdain,
yeah,
we'd be on a roll.
Yeah.
But we can really, this whatever this consciousness is or isn't, can really get lit up and torture the fuck out of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And no one's doing it. I mean, it's happening in your bubble, right? Something is torturing the fuck out of you, and you wish it would stop. You don't know how to stop it. So, you know, smoke a doobie, hit the spider solitaire, and put on a Lou Reed show in the background.
That sounds like good.
You know, and maybe with enough...
prescription for happiness.
Right? With enough delight, right?
Yeah.
Sensual delight. You get a break from self-torture.
You know, some people seem to they may have had the ability to find a path through it that actually brings out some sanity into their miserable lives. And I was listening to a Rich Pryor interview with a guy who wrote a book about Rich Pryor.
Oh, I'm like, Richard Pryor. Bring in your sanity.
And it sounds like an incredible
war.
She and a mother, who knows what happened to his mother, but she was raised by a grandmother who was a madam. Carried a gun on her leg, kicked her leg, or a straight razor, or kicked her bra, or something like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes
mm-hmm.
Her father was, you know, just horrible. You know, it was just,
yeah,
bad. And he
sounds kind of like the way you raised your kids.
I came out of your astrology chart with a family guy.
Oh.
Yes, Richard Pryor had a colorful childhood.
But he found a way through. Like, he had to be at home when he was in my hand to play a whole different role. And then he'd go out and do comedy, you know?
Yeah.
His version of comedy, which was amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's just remarkable.
Topics he hit on.
That, you know, some people can find a path through that, or even take a concentration path.
Yeah.
Can't person or anything else.
Well, let's go back to what's present, right, in your immediate experience, than you know, how other people have gotten through this.
Yeah, it's all rather mediocre in comparison. It's all middling stuff.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It can appear that way. Yeah.
Not nearly so dramatic.
We habituate to lazy eye consciousness.
Yeah.
And it's not enough for many, not all, but for many so-called people, lazy eye consciousness is not enough. We need to participate in, conjure up a little thrill.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, and we will do that through all the ways that people do that. You know, some people, you know, shoot grouse. Some people go hunting with, the former vice president and get shot at. You know, anything can happen here. Maybe you're a general of an army somewhere in Africa or the Middle East or whatever, and you hunt children to enroll them in your parade. Yeah, I mean, there's missing persons happening all the time. Sorrowful events, airplanes crashing into houses and flooding in San Francisco and deep snows in Buffalo and all kinds of things are happening. I went to the Pebble Hill event last night to see a young man, might I use the word channel, Our Lady of Guadalupe.
I looked him up actually randomly and was going to go before my glasses broke. And
I'm so sorry you weren't there.
Yeah, that looked pretty wild.
I think I probably would have.
I left early. I wish you had were there because I kind of count on you as a co-conspirator and diagnosis.
He just seemed like a weird. Like I watched a video.
I mean,
I didn't want anything going on like the television.
Yeah. Well. I mean, some channeling can really, you know, you can really feel something going on, you know, and your hair bristles and your, a little tear comes to your eye and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, what the hell is happening?
Yeah, it's like, whoa, that's cool. Some channeling not. And,
this was a not, I guess?
No, not for me. I mean, I'm hard to please anyway. Or easy to please, you know. But yeah, it was great.
Depending on what it is. That's
right, depending on how, what it is and how you feel. But I, you know.
It's
I,
superhero movies, well, yes.
Yeah. Well, like, you just know that if Our Lady of Guadalupe is laying down some tracks, you're going to pick it up.
Yeah.
You just, how long does it take?
Yeah.
Oh, 20 seconds. You talk to me for 20 seconds as Our Lady of Guadalupe, and I'm going to pick up pretty fast whether you're putting down some tracks or whether you're just shaking it.
And it was just,
and even before he got to the part of the program where he was asked to channel, we had to sit through a very lengthy, terribly boring guided meditation from the director of the New Hope Metaphysical Society, the lovely Amy Jelqualo. And she's a really cool looking person, because if you look at her, you can see like she's not from here. Mm. I mean, and you can just see that she is just not from here. She's a conglomeration of, you know, interesting energies that are, make her like, yeah, she's not from here. You can tell. But that doesn't mean that she's necessarily, you know, gifted with respect to, the things that we like to talk about. But she can certainly, like anyone can, you know, put you through your paces on a guided meditation and go on and on and on and on. And just when you thought, you know, she would leave you alone, she finds something else to hook your attention into. And you're like, Amy, would you please? I love you. I mean, you're strange and I get that, but just shut the fuck up, because I can't do this anymore. And you know, when I go to an event like that, I'm usually under the influence of something. I need it to get through. That's why I convince myself of that. No, I do need it. I need it. Yeah, I know. Yeah, fuck me up. Yeah, it's just, yeah. So, but you can appreciate the vulnerability that you're in, let's say, if you're under the influence of something. And so you're just sensitive to how people will reach out and grab your attention. And you're like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Just leave me the fuck alone, because you're a loser and, you know, don't. And so this is part of the hypnosis that happens in these, you know, New Hope metaphysical societies. It's kind of like consent to be superficially hypnotized. And I was like, I can't do this. But I couldn't move, which is very common. And so like, oh, fuck. I'm stuck. I can't do it, but I can't move. Fuck. And I'm agonizing in my own private nightmare, you know, like, oh, Jesus, I'm so fucked. Yes. Finally, I get my body to move, and I'm like, yes. So I could actually stand up without tumbling over.
And, 10 minutes?
Oh, no, much longer. It was like a half an hour, this guided meditation, or at least 20. I mean, it went on for longer.
I mean, having sat for what, like 6 hours or something one day?
Yeah, I can pretty much, you know, sleep through myself. Yeah, but I just had to like get away from the, you know, just get away from it, poured myself some water. Anyway, after that painful process, the young gentleman, the artist, you know, he got up to speak. And it was funny because he starts telling stories about, you know, his encounters with aliens and lights and things. And he's going through a story that took about 10 minutes to recall with exquisite detail. And it dawns on me as I'm sitting there in my condition, I'm like, no one can recall a fucking thing. Nobody can. If it looks like someone is recalling an event that happened to them a number of years ago with exquisite detail over the course of 10 minutes, you know they're lying.
Yeah. They've just crafted their story to do whatever it is they want to do, which is probably sell artwork.
That's right. So well, anything. I mean, so our lovely friend Tina was there with Dave. Mm. And during the break, usually I'm happy if no one talks to me, but Tina was very kind to talk to me. And I said to her, I brought this to her attention. I said, Tina, what event, any single event, do you recall from your life that you could actually speak about, what's the word, extemporaneously, for 10 or more minutes and recall that amount of detail? She didn't take her long to consider it. She said, not a one. She saw that she was not capable of telling a story with that level of recall, because there's no way that anyone knows what happened to them a moment before now. And so I said, well, if you nor I nor anyone else in the room could actually do what that guy did, isn't he lying? And she just went, like, yeah. He's got, you know, yeah, I was
he's
like.
He's told the story so many times, probably.
Well, see, that's just it. You know, anything that you've told a number of times, you've actually, right, you've.
Firmed up the moral.
That's right. Yeah. And so the entire evening, Amy's guided meditation was, at least from where I stood, you know, really an unwelcome intrusion. Though if it was, of course, it was done with, you know, kindness on her part. Then this young man, you could see, launched into a directive of personality and storytelling that was just unreal, was not authentic, was untrue, was not present. It was all show. And people respond to that, you know? And I'm like, whoa, this is going south.
Who cares about that shit?
Well, that was the other thing. After he was done speaking about all of these experiences and, you know, great and healings and the smell of roses and things like that, that happened in the presence of, you know, Our Lady of Guadalupe, right? I'm like, yeah, okay, you know, what? And I, thankfully I didn't stand up because I was, you know, a couple times I was ready to, like, you know, just draw a lot of negative attention to myself, which I'm really, really good at. And but Tina, you know, was so kind to speak to me during the break that I shared that with her. I said, okay. And let me ask you something, Tina. Now that you've heard this young man tell his story and sat through a lovely guided meditation, are you feeling it? Are you in the new consciousness? Have we hit the Aquarian age now? Right? Right? Is it, are we there now? She said, no. I said, well, that's my question. Right? What's the deliverable? What's the takeaway from all this? Then of course he went into the channeling part, and that just got, that was even worse.
Yeah.
Because listening to him tell a story was a little bit engaging. But listening to him free associate and use about 8 words within the New Age dictionary over and over and over again, over and over and over again, within, you know, for a half hour or more of channeling, I'm like, what? Then, you know, he's talking as if it's, you know, Our Lady of Guadalupe talking about her son, Jesus. So he's like moving between various kind of personality styles and tenses and talking about Jesus and going on and on about really superficial and trivial New Age pablum, using a very, very small vocabulary to try to continue to evoke the audience into some kind of believability. And I was starting to giggle.
You should have been there.
Oh, that would have been.
Yeah, I was starting to go giggle on it.
Jeff giggle.
And
bad if I was there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I was just wondering. I was wondering. Was like, is anybody else in this room? And the room was really packed. I mean, it was way, way more packed.
I've only been to about 4 of those things.
Yeah.
And I've yet to see anything that was like, it's all been so okay.
It was packed, and more people came last night than typically come to, you know, Pebble Hill on a Sunday. He's
our mother, good artist. Guadalupe, is that Mary, the mother of Jesus? Is that who that is?
Well, I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Manifestation of the Virgin Mary came to us, some Mexican farmer or something?
Yeah.
Oh.
Sure.
Okay. There's different.
Which one came
three
little kids?
You got a couple in this room.
Yeah.
I'm like, which one came here with three little kids?
There you go. That was the other curious thing. It's like the presence of, you know, the Our Lady of Guadalupe is, when is she missing? I'm sorry, when is she not?
Oh, I see. When is she not present?
When is she not present?
When is she not present?
Is there a moment in your life that you can't smell roses? I don't think so. I don't think so. So for me, it's, you know, it's a certain kind of standard of care, right? It's a standard of awakening. Huh?
Why did you go?
Why am I here? I don't know.
You never know, you know?
Come on, Jeff. The company's a lot better tonight.
Oh, yeah. No question about that.
It's a little credit.
You really have no control over what you're doing.
Yeah, because, you know, it's like, whatever. You know, Wednesday night. It's an excuse to go for a ride, smoke a little puffy in the parking lot, and, you know, chill, kick back with our Lady of Guadalupe. I mean, who wouldn't go?
The summer was that she was like a psychic, or she was a medium, but she was a fake. I don't know if anybody saw that.
Who's that?
the one who was in the Birdman, the big guy, Richard
Amistone. Oh, yes, that was a great movie.
Yeah.
That was great. Yeah. I mean, as a, you know, as a Woody Allen-ish, yeah, bizarre staccato love story. Yeah, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Okay, well, I just had to get that out of my system. Thanks. Thanks for coming, all. Just turn this off. Let's go back to the, go ahead.
There's the distinct sense of the red carpet of time being rolled out in front of me. At the same time as every time I step on the next area of the red carpet, the one behind me just rolls right up.
No.
Like I find myself kind of frantically trying to write things down at work and keep records because
yes,
I'll look at an email, I'll move on. I'll look at another email, I'll move on. I'll have a conversation, I'll move on. And they are gone. I mean, freaking gone. And it's I'm trying to do my job and the carpet's rolling up as quick as it could possibly roll up behind me. And I'm helpless to and yet sometimes things just come to me that I would have never remembered before. I'm finding out absolutely not in control of my ability to do my job. I am.
Sweet.
And I've never been particularly good at my job.
Yeah.
I seem to fool people pretty well. But
well, then you are good at your job.
Give a workshop.
It's like
how to fool everyone at the place that you work.
It is that. I think maybe I notice more that what I don't.
Well, when you,
in my head,
when you're,
I don't know.
Yeah, when you're naturally, let's just say, attentive to the texture of your present consciousness, then you can see very clearly without of any fanfare how the past is just disappearing. Just absolutely, just disappearing and how you are functioning at a remarkable level of communicative, evocative interactivity with no effort whatsoever. I mean, let's just right here. I mean, listen to words. What barking noises made with the tongue and the teeth and the heart and the soft palate coming into effervescent presence from nowhere, spoken without apparently any delay between thought and impulse, visualization and speech, and heard at the speed of sound or the speed of light within your so-called brain. And you think you know, and I think, and I hope you think I know you know what you know about what I'm talking about. Fuck you.
Yeah, and not even just one word, one letter, one syllable launches like a gazillion things in your head.
Yeah,
a fucking million.
Yeah, right. And with all of this magical power that you are just simply gifted with, it's clear to see as we just become a little more sensitive to it, that holy fuck, all of this magical power is absolutely at hand, expressing itself with incredible profundity and bravado, braggadocio even, and means nothing.
And it doesn't give a rat's ass if you can go back and find that email that has a key piece of information you're supposed to pull together for the next report or not.
Mm-mm. Yeah, no.
Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, that's fun. This is fun. This is completely bizarre.
I'm having a lot of fun with that, with the like trying to figure out what's going on with me or whatever, and everyone's trying to figure it out, and I'm Google searching it, and I'm like, this is just so useless. Nobody knows. I don't know. Eye doctor says I'm fine.
I've been Googling you too. I came up empty.
She doesn't exist.
What the fuck is going on with Francine? I've used Bing and Google, Yahoo.
Well, Bing sucks. Get rid of Bing.
I know.
And their graphics suck, too.
Yeah. Bing and their graphics suck, and you can't find out a goddamn thing about Francine. That's it for Bing.
All you had to do was say the word Bing. I'm like, let's Bing.
And it automatically installs as your default browser. Yeah. And it's hard to figure out how to get rid of it.
You can't get it off.
You automatically install as you.
Oh, God.
God, if someone would just, you know, give me the mouse click before I click on myself, I would like, nope.
How do we get rid of that, Jeff? Like, why do we uninstall?
Yeah.
You wake up in the morning and the eyes go plink, you're here. Like,
there you go.
What the fuck?
You see? You want to uninstall.
Yeah.
I really want to get rid of my personality, but I can't get rid of it.
You know, don't reprogram. Just uninstall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or keep the body, I guess.
I just want to restore the system to its original setting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Where's the restore disk? Yeah, really. Yeah.
But, you know,
Mom, where's the restore disk? We threw that out. Oh, God.
We threw it out with the placenta.
Yeah, really. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we planted it in under a tree.
You know, so, you know, in the awake state, I will think and I will sort of begrudge what I'm thinking. You know, I'm like, damn it, I gotta get out of this rut. You know, I try to.
Yeah. Right. You see, the reason that occurs is because we're hoping that we can occupy our present experience in a pleasing way. Right? The greed is that I want to survive and occupy my present experience in an optimal or novel way. And by kind of insisting upon being the survivor, to occupy your own experience, you remain in lazy eye consciousness. The disdain follows the curious urgency to be the survivor of your own experience. So play with it for a moment or not. Here's whatever this is. Do you really wish to be, want to be, need to be the survivor of this present experience? Do you need to find the email of yourself with the key data? Or can you just let this, can you just leave this alone? See, now you're not looking for, you're not looking for an idealized experience that you inhabit. Just leave it alone. You see? Then it's like, holy shit. This is like too for words. Just leave it alone. That's very different texture than I'm going to get enlightened. I'm going to have an experience. I want novelty. I'm going to study with Peter Brown. I'm going to go on the next retreat. I'm going to get somewhere with me and then occupy, right, the certificate of, well, now you're good too. See, just leave it alone. Here it is.
Yeah.
Magical powers like on tap. This is just pure magical powers on tap. But you don't have to occupy it.
Huh. You know, it I don't take this too literally, but it seems like.
We'll try not to.
It's
gonna be really hard for us because we're very literal.
Okay, give it to me, Jamie.
We're very literal.
It seems as though, you know, any amount of clinging on to all this stuff actually creates the physical, in a sense. I mean, it creates time and physicality and all that. And, you know, so, like, to continue on, I was talking about my wakeful state, but it continues when I'm asleep. I mean, the brain is still, like, you know, grabbing ideas and, you know, or
yes.
Things. And it's like
sure.
There's this physical thing I've created.
It seems.
You're like Frankenstein. Dr.
Frankenstein.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's like, I like that. Wait, I like this.
But as opposed to chill, because I've gone through chill spaces, and chill, you wake up in the middle of the night and say, oh, that's the middle of the night. Oh, what was that dream? And oh, what's that dream? But it's such a difference.
Okay, yeah. Yes, yes, yes. You are magical power embodied. And as magical power, your capacity for feeling is unchartable. And the discernment of one, right, feeling, one texture as contrasted with another texture, which appear in what we refer to as memory, is also magical power and your capacity to enjoy vacuity and to laboriously defend against, right, acquiring mind are also part of magical power. Magic power.
The interesting thing is I certainly don't invest in that seriously. I mean, I still get stuck, believe me, but I'm not as invested. I don't believe in it so much.
In what?
This is
in
his imagination.
Yeah. Right. All the stuff that's
or even in his own disappointment. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, it's these symptoms, you know, of, let's call it native intelligence, occur as you do what it is that we do. You wake up to the nuanced quality of your being rubbery, weird, disembodied sensitivity. It's a lot of fun. When you don't actually occupy this as a person. Wow. Then the novelty that we thought we were going to extract from out there turns out to be myself. That's a big shift, right? Because if I go on a retreat or a mono diet or I get a series of 5 high colonics, you know, at a discount. You know. Is that a cornflake that just went by? I swore I chew those like 20 times. God, no, cornflakes, man.
I knew someone that did that for a living. I'm like, stick tubes up people's butts and siphon
food. Flush them out.
Yeah. I'm not a garbage man. I'm a poop cipher.
Sweep my asshole out of my spiritual pursuits. Thank you very much.
Well, that's what you get for saying the word colonic.
I know. I meant kaleidoscopic. I misspoke. Depends what your definition of is. I did not have sex with that young woman. Kaleidoscopic.
One time I had that weird dream. I woke up in the middle of the night and I went, phantasmagoric. And then I woke up the next morning and I thought, what was that word? I didn't remember it. But it was funny how it was just like,
mm-hmm.
I was like, I didn't even have that word.
Phantasagoraphobia. You know, this novelty that interests us happens to be us, this really weird, perfectly silent, perfectly still, perfectly uninvolved and unoccupied vacuity of this presence with no subject and no object in view. At the so-called same time, were there any, that you can parse this out as self and other and, right, the three-dimensionality of circumstances, events, and sensorium of all kinds. All of that dreaming beatitude accompanies the also already present, pure, unafflicted novelty of you. It's strange. So if I'm in search of enlightenment, it suggests, and that's the good thing, or not, but it suggests that I've taken the ephemera sufficiently seriously that right? I'm actually occupying my experience as a persona. And the moment you're occupying experience as a persona, well, you're fucked because you're a sorrowful, lamentable, separate, right, dreaming persona, because that's the nature of persona. You can't really have a persona that's not also completely demented. It's not possible, you see? But when we go in search of celebrities or other spiritual, you know, niceties, we're hoping to celebrate the persona. You want to have the best persona on the block. You want to be able to appear well-adjusted or spiritually accomplished to your friends so that they might buy you a root beer or whatever. But when you don't occupy when you don't occupy present experience, you're like so fucking zero. Nothing can compare to nothing. Here, this is the novelty. This is the sublimity of the mind, the heart of Our Lady of Guadalupe. This is it. With or without the roses, with or without the miraculous healings, just as it is. And to begin to feel yourself as fucking A, like the source and observing plenitude, both source and observing plenitude of absolutely nothing. You're like, what, me worry? But it's not even about worry anymore, you see. It's not even about the pleasantries or the mispleasantries of experiencing life as a human. A lot of seeking is done around ameliorating, right, the vicissitudes and disappointments of being a human, being a persona. And so we frame good things that happen to us, bad things that happen to us, spiritual things that happen to us, secular things that happen to us, through the lens of, right, what we think is human inhabitation. Hey, but this is not human. You're not human. You're just plenitude. You're magic. You're not actually corporeal. And then it's strange because we just naturally stop referring to events and circumstances or things that could happen or did happen or won't happen or that we want to happen through the lens of trying to optimize satisfaction for the human. Because that's all extroverted novelty craving, right? Micromanaging the universe is extroverted novelty craving. When you stop micromanaging the universe, you're also done internally, to call it that, with the pursuit of novelty because you've discovered that you happen to be the most novel guy in the universe, the most novel, right, woman presence in the universe. It happens to be you. And strangely, singularly you, because you're all that is. Not through the lens of the body, so what we call the body mind, but we're tuning to a different, let's call it harmonic, not the human harmonic, not the I, me, my harmonic, or the resolution of sorrow harmonic, which is, holy fuck. What is this? And there you are, there you are, you are you. You are the singularity of all that exists. Right now you are. You see, what's appearing in your experience is not subjects and objects. It's just not. What's appearing in your experience is a vacuous plenitude of unspeakability. That's what's appearing in your experience. And it's so intimate that you can't even say, oh, I am appearing in myself, even though that's the best you can do, as duality shrinks, shrivels up, and you are you. Because you are appearing in the experience of you. And the experience of you is no other than the experience of you. And everything that appears is actually appearing in you as the experiencing. You're experiencing, you're experiencing. I mean, I may look at, you know, another biobot over across the room and say, oh, Suzanne, and, you know, feel how I feel and think how I think and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But everything about her as an object in my view is really where it's occurring. She's occurring in me. Suzanne is occurring in me, in my experience. And what am I conscious of? I'm not conscious of subjects and objects. Mm-hmm. I'm actually conscious of experiencing.
Because you're observing yourself in some way, too. I think that's where you really start to see how weird you're like, oh, like it's not me as a person observing the other person.
Yeah.
I'm observing.
Yes. All you can observe is yourself. That's all you can observe. Is what's appearing in your experience. And you can't hold subjects and objects external to you responsible for you.
I've heard it described as like you've got a camera and you've got a lens, and all of a sudden it like peels back and all of a sudden it includes itself.
There, yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
That's the better one. Thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just kind of, it's a bizarre reference, I think, to that same kind of thing you're pointing to.
What about concepts and ideas and history?
Isn't, aren't concepts and ideas and history, or at least what we think what we're referring to when we use those words, wafting in your experience.
Yeah.
They're just appearing in you. Some memories and words and concepts and history or aspirations can be stimulating. Some can be, you know, frightening or trigger a bracing response. Some you're just completely neutral to as you go about your sleepwalking business.
Aren't they all attempts to gel something, to make something?
Well, it's just weird to feel like, yeah, they're, to have awareness of them is to be all those things.
Yes.
Be Joy Caesar, be Greek gods. And
yeah, right.
Jesus Christ. And,
yes.
You know, Bill Cosby or something. You know?
That's right.
Those categories.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of
funny. Yeah. Or Bill Cosby's roofie salesman.
He's in there too.
Yes. So we can see that this expressive tendency of, I don't know, call it consciousness or chocolate milk, call it chocolate milk. dreams up a storm. And incredible associations can appear from moment to moment, and we refer to these associations, these, you know, stimulating observations, which are content appearing in experience. We refer to them as memories and history and da-da-da-da-da and bare stories of various kind. But what they actually are is what? Subtle impulse. Right? The thought of Bill Cosby is what? It's a subtle impulse appearing in your experience that may have associations with it, right? Of all kinds. And even the associations that are triggered by the associations of the thoughts that are occurring completely spontaneously are also occurring in, right? What we say is your experience. And if you occupy experience, which you can do, because this can anthropomorphize itself. That's why we suffer. Why humans suffer is because this is capable of anthropomorphizing itself. It's a singularity. There's nothing other than it. It's fractal and remarkable and stimulative beyond measure. And because it's so creative and curious, it can whip into view a sense of an individuated identity. and lose that sight of all this is doing is appearing in itself. All you can do is be conscious of the luminous myth of experiencing.
Is it because we're being carefully taught this week, as we evolve in our lives, as we grow in our lives, that it's all there to begin with? I mean, or it's all not there to begin with.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you might hear from the various stories of enlightened celebrities how this has always been this. You've always, you know, the notion is you've always known yourself. What else could you have known? You've always known yourself. You just didn't see that you were yourself. You thought you were something or someone else, and therefore afflicted, right, by circumstances and events as if they were actually occurring external to you. Yeah. So that's, that you could say is the, why we might use the language, you know, the spark of duality, right?
Makes it hard to blame anybody.
Yeah. Mm. Sure it does. Right. Yeah. It takes a while, maybe it's fair to say, it takes a while for us to begin to see that as we stumble into this, it really has no utility. It's just not interested in improving your life as a human.
It just doesn't care.
Right? It's so transcendent of the typical way that we relate to experiencing, that you can't get any mileage out of this, which is great. Right, as long as we're holding out for mileage, right, that's the delusion of being, right, corporeally ensconced.
I've had the same feeling about, got involved with Facebook in a political sense.
Ooh, that's like being on the holodeck several levels down.
I mean, I can get outspoken politically.
Ooh.
So,
but, we've got a closet Republican in our midst. Duck.
Oh, yeah, right. but
if you're going to talk about politics, I'm going to have another piece of chocolate.
But it seems as though that's all because I had this concept, this idea, this hope, or whatever, of this way that the way America should be and Americans should be. You know?
Okay.
I mean, somewhere in there is this idea, this notion that there is, you know, a better way. And I'm sort of at the point like, so what? I mean, whatever. You know, it is the way it is. You know, why? But I don't know that I'm going to necessarily give up that idea, but whether it's my own personal body, or whether it's the body of America, or the ideas of it's all just this kind of, in a sense, created crap. You know, it's like just
that's right.
A conjured concept.
That's right.
It's hard to believe in anything anymore. When this gets closer to you, you just can't believe.
Oh, you're
anything.
Done, man.
There's no platform to stand on.
When Tina was speaking with me yesterday, she asked me about my, you know, faith of origin. And I was like, I wanted to respond to her question, you know. I mean, it was a sincere question, you know. I didn't want to be a wise guy or anything. I said, I was like born in a Jewish family, a Reformed Jewish family, and I was, you know, bar mitzvahed, whatever that means. I said, but to tell you the truth, I feel even peculiar saying it, as if I have any association with being Jewish, let alone being human. Like, what religion? I'm like, whoa. And so yeah. I didn't go quite that far at that point. I did a little later, but then she started, you know, we had each other's attention. And so she started telling stories about her background from Greek Orthodox. Mm-hmm. And, you know, doing mass, right, in Greek or Latin or da-da-da-da-da, and people changing and stories, and I'm listening and I'm nodding and I'm saying yes. And at one point I said something that was kind of peculiar. It came to mind. I was like, I don't take anything hostage, Tina. I don't collect anything. And she was like, you know, like, what? What do you mean by that? I said, look, this is just happening, right? It's all just happening, isn't it? And I just don't collect anything. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she wasn't offended by it. She, you know, she got that. I mean, she was like, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I said, so that's how I like to hang out, you know, if you'll forgive me. It's like, I'm not collecting anything right now. I don't know what's going on. I don't know from Jewish or Greek Orthodox or any story that we tell or what this young man is about or nothing.
That's just a good generic response. And I just want people to show up or something. Just look at them.
You can feel it. Yeah.
It's so funny, though.
Right, I don't collect anything, yeah.
So.
It's
all confusion. I mean, you know, it's just a layer of confusion to most people. When you talk about vacuity, for crying out loud, they're like, huh?
Yeah.
You know,
about what?
Vacuity. Vacuousness.
Yeah.
I mean, all those kinds of terms. Ruination.
Sure.
You know, these are all.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, she's been here a couple times and. She talks to Dave about this stuff a lot, so.
But
you know.
I don't know if people don't have a
translate the persona that he plays in.
It's just hard to communicate.
Well, it's impossible. That's the fun of it.
I mean, there's some hope that there's some people
that I know has hope
outside of this group.
Well, look at all the groups that you've had to abandon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's true.
Gwen and Friends.
Yeah.
86.
All my friends. I almost abandoned my entire family.
86.
For some reason, there's.
Yeah, I didn't even get started on. I was going, and then I just like that.
This is 86 on everybody else.
I used to drum.
Highly sensitive.
Yeah.
It was very important. Very important.
Drumming. Yeah.
For years.
TV shows. I said, no, I just put the headphones on, and just randomly sit there watching.
Yeah, you really, this is a tractor beam, you see.
No shit.
The vacuity, the luminous vacuity of your own immediate experience, which happens to be God, is a bit of a tractor beam. Once it's got you by the short and curlies, you're not going anywhere else.
Yeah.
You're just not. Yeah. You're done. You know. And no one can take credit for that. You have to take credit for it. It appeared in your experience. The revelation of how profound you are has appeared in your experience. You have to sniff it out. That's all. Who can you hold responsible for that? You're the only thing here. That's it. You're the only game in town.
Yep.
And so you ultimately, if you want to put it that way, are responsible for recognizing that you're Brahmin. Fuck you. Deal with it.
Make it so.
That was funny.
Did you see that?
Oh God, that was great. Make it so, make it so, make it so.
It's, they do this Star Trek thing. They do, Picard you know, instead of let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It's like, make it so, but they make the whole thing up.
You know? They have Spock with a little cap, like a little cap on.
Yeah,
they just, not, no, it was, no, it's Next Generation, right? It's all snippets from Star Trek Next Generation, so it was Picard and his team.
The only thing that wasn't rhythmic in there was Wesley says, he says something and he says, shut up, Wesley!
That's right.
That's the only thing.
That was pretty funny.
Oh, that was hilarious.
What was this part of Saturday Night Live? Or
no, it was just a Facebook thing. I think it's the best Christmas carol I've heard in ages.
To me. Anything I can replace while I'm, you know, have to listen to the other stuff. It's good.
Just post it on my
timeline.
Right. So we use the word wake up. It's okay. You know, it could be easily misunderstood, right? Or held out to be, or held out to be special and right, all of these other right things.
It's a struggle.
You could say the curious veil or distillation of imagining that there are subjects and objects, circumstances and events, which is not untrue. There's no point, right, in asserting or refuting anything. It's like, You feel, you begin to see and recognize the texture of your own being. The incredible intimacy and aliveness and quietude and like delicate textures of your present experience. And that's the novelty. You are the novelty. And the recognition of this novelty becomes your home. You see, you take up residence in yourself as yourself, just completely organically. And yeah, what? There's no soapbox. You hang like you've always hung out. Now you're not befuddled by, right, imagination and projection. You're just, I don't believe how strange I am. I just can't get over it. And it doesn't quit. And because it's incredibly effusive, both demonstrably effusive as subjects and objects, it is similarly effusive as you go in. Mm-hmm. It's still as effusive, but now the texture, the delicacy of your own consciousness there's no language that humans have yet to conjure that can iterate or express the profundity of your own texture. It's incredibly effusive, but we can't speak about it anymore because
even if we could, nobody would understand it.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, by doing what we do, you could say we are speaking about it, calling attention to it, and having a direct encounter with it.
And the word formations that you put together when you put a post out on Facebook.
Yeah.
I mean, they're incredible. And so few really, it seems to me, I mean, for people that I know,
right,
when I've sent it out, I mean, you know, they're missing somehow.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Absolutely. This is a secret club that no one has to keep a secret about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One about the subcard, because a friend of mine's son was like, 4 or 5, they asked him, what are you thankful for Thanksgiving? He said, myself and the sun.
That's pretty good. I like that. Myself and the sun.
Nice. I'm going to use that next time. I have to, anyone ever ask me.
Yeah, the pushy lamp in the sky.
Yeah.
What? What?
Go back to sleep.
Whoa, that's just too much. Dude. Easy does it. It's really.
It's often so.
We're all, you know, playful in our way, right? Creative and impish, right? In our way. And playing around with, you know, language or evocative textures and things that you can, you know, whip into shape by feeling things, having a mood, and then seeing how that mood, you know, might touch letters on a keyboard. It's kind of fun to see whether anything that was, oh God, present in the mood, right, could find its way on in a Facebook post and see if it could, you know, if anyone could hear it.
I don't know how you find pictures to work, you know, but it really does something.
They do help. Yeah. Sure. Right. Yeah. Well, we're visual piglets, right?
Yeah.
We're really aggressive with our, right? We grasp with our senses, right? That's another interesting thing is, you know, being of a dualistic and opportunistic manner, a samsaric manner, you can feel how the senses have a grasping kind of quality. We pretty much ignore everything in sight, but we also grasp with our eyes in various ways that we construct the universe that we think with that we're living in. And as that begins to shift, then you can notice how your senses are just, they stop grasping. Your eyes stop grasping, your ears stop grasping, you know, all the olfactory system and the right qualities of touch stop grasping, and all of this right acquisitiveness that can batter in your digits and your wrist, they can just go completely limp.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's you. When I taught yoga some years ago, I would play around with just dropping all grasping from the wrist, right? Just leave the digits alone. And some people were like, whoa, you know, got it, right? They were like, whoa, that could really take them on a journey. And other people you could see would get like pissed off, right? Yeah.
Because they wanted to exert some effort?
Well, no, because I think they got pissed off because as you entrain them or invite them into a certain kind of depth of relaxation that they're not really prepared for, or there, if there's a lot of, let's call it psychic tension in them, and you start inviting them into, it's like, it's disorient and frightening. Yeah. I had a big blowout, not that I did, but I was teaching yoga for one summer at the Omega Institute. They invited, you know, me to teach a little yoga. And, you know, I was trained by, a little bit Kripalu style, not so much Amrit Desai, who was just a big, you know, narcissist, but something about the myofascial or cranial rhythms and Jean Klein's, right, energy body style of yoga. So, yeah, that's how I like to play and teach yoga. But people would get pissed off. I mean, angry. I mean, it would just blow them out. It was a real psychic, you know, blow. Some guy years, it's a long time ago, just went completely berserk after he went to like one yoga class that I gave, and he just started like bad mouthing me like all over the community and to his friends, and I mean, he just went completely over the top considering it was just a fucking yoga class, you know. And that, it just, it happens. People get triggered that way. When you just have a, I don't know, a knack for, let's say, inviting someone into a different kind of shamanic texture, right? Some people, as we mature, we're open to it. We can go with it. But if it comes at us when we're not prepared, it can be very threatening and very disoriented, and so we'll act out.
Shocking.
To defend against it.
Piss somebody off? It's shocking.
Yeah.
I have the feeling that I forget her name, that SIG person. that she does yoga. She has her picture. I guess she's a teacher. But very strenuous kind of yoga.
You mean Erica Blesnack?
Yeah.
She's enlightened. You didn't know?
I know that she knows that.
I'd rather hang out with somebody that disturbs me a little bit.
I've always had that same kind of attraction, yeah.
Like, we can always find, you know, those folks that'll agree with all our complaints and, oh, yeah, you can always find that kind of just mainstream bullshit. But to have somebody that just pushes your buttons.
Yeah.
It's good.
What are friends for?
Yeah.
I know, I just got that song in my head too.
Which one? Clarence Clemens? Or?
I'll be by your side forevermore.
Oh, that one.
Who sings that?
There's a duo.
Is that where both? That was a really bad.
I know.
Yeah. I don't know, Clarence. What do you
think? Oh, that's Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder and Paul McCartney.
And Paul McCartney.
Oh, that was like a really bad song.
I think it was such a bad rendition. I didn't even recognize it. I don't know.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks a lot, yeah.
But it was a good shot.
Would you sing at my bar mitzvah?
No. I'll spare everybody.
So, what do you think this, the wedding is going to be? Do you have any, is it just a totally open forum? Are people going to be speaking or anything like that?
Well, you know, I like to hang out a little, what's the word, extemporaneously. See what just happens. And we do that with each other, you know, so we could get together at a party and.
Nice guy wedding or something.
Yeah, like nice guy wedding. Yeah, like, whoa, I love you, man. I mean, Beth.
Well, let's talk about the personal love versus like, you know, like what happens in that sense? Like if the residents, like, you know how in that movie, her, where the intelligence became enlightened. And
yes.
They were like, well, right. I'm in love with 300,000 people now.
At the same time, I'm communicating with, I'm communicating intimately with, having phone sex with, speaking casually with about 500 people right now. And conscious of each and every one of those, right? Like, whoa.
So in terms of, you know, all this, you know, it's weird, the idea, like, you know, how do you still resonate or have a person, you know, like connections with some people, but not like everybody. How is that?
Yeah, you'll have to find out.
I know that making sense.
No, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Well, you are absolutely unadorned, but you know your sheath hasn't died yet. So you be you.
So you still like to hang out with some peeps and not others.
Well, sure.
Same way you like some vegetables.
Yeah.
Although, you know,
now that I'm enlightened,
call people vegetables.
Now that I'm enlightened, I just can't get enough asparagus.
Chocolate.
We talked about E.T.
Yeah.
I think I heard him say one time, he's like, somebody was apologizing about the interview. He's like, look, he can say whatever you want because it's all, like, it's all great, so to speak, you know, like.
E.T. said that?
Oh,
I'm kicked up thinking the little guy with the eyeballs that wants to go.
Well, they have a same
need. I know that they have the same
thing. It's confusing totally for a minute.
I knew what she was talking about.
It's
a doppelganger.
Yeah. It's like I kind of got the sense, like, it's all good no matter what. It's all good, you know. You put a step on my toe and I'm still, like, you know. orgasmic with the world.
You see, this is what's interesting. We have a tendency to want to, what would you say, scoop up awake, and lather it on the human waffle.
With root beer and chocolate milk.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. You see, and so this is a way of saying, oh, see, awake is just, I mean, it's just so. Yes. This is just so. But we want to see how it's going to play out through the filter of my human-ness, right? Mm-hmm. And that's fun. I mean, absolutely. You know, Ramana Maharshi had a, you know, a beautiful gaze, and Satya Sai Baba, you know, sucked boy dick. Yeah, I mean, you know, Muktananda, you know, Muktananda's handlers picked out underage women, and he would have bizarre tantric intercourse with them. You know, and of course everything is denied. It's all denied.
I'm getting like reincarnated. Like, that with that hat for you to
Vivekananda.
Yeah, I don't know how to say his name, but he's got that like turban.
Yeah, yeah.
Hat.
Right.
What was his poison? Was it little boys?
I don't
young
know if he
men?
No. Osho
was Rajneesh.
I just see his picture.
Rajneesh.
Oh, Osho.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's just, you know, at times when, you know, like you were just stirring a morph into some sort of, like, I don't know, swami with that hat on today.
We do. We morph. We do. I mean, your own experiences, Coco, right?
I mean, but,
whatever.
Is he a Russian? Russian, that works.
You morph.
If I were actually to just think about how this conversation went from here,
it's great.
Question to it, I would have another laughing fit.
Don't hold back, girly.
That was great. It morphed. It surely morphed.
It does. Yeah.
She morphs according to the person.
The morphogenic group.
You can become, let's just say, fascinated with what appears in phenomenality, because the interest and the curiosity of, right, the fractalized entirety of all experience is like uncanny. I mean, you can look at, you know, images from the Hubble telescope or from Chile or France or observatories in Hawaii or wherever, and I mean, you can see shit that you're just not supposed to see. Yeah. Right? I mean, the power of magnification to glimpse, 5 billion year old light and see it appear as a, you know, enormous galaxy, pushing out gas. A gas jet at what, 2 million miles an hour. Gas is streaming at 2 million miles an hour, at a length of 10,000 light years.
That'd be cool to see.
Yeah, yeah. The images are there, you know.
Yeah.
You're like, what?
And they're having more and more, there's more images, and all of a sudden we're going, we're in this explosion right now.
Yeah,
absolutely. Part of the curve.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Everything that we're observing, I would argue, macrocosmically and microcosmically, is revealing what we're boldly speaking about in our, you know, non-scientific terminology, which is the curious myth of all dreaming. The singularity of consciousness as an activized, you know, zip, activized to zero. Everything is revealing it. And what's being seen through the disciplines of science and mathematics, et cetera, right? And meticulous observation. is shining back, right, revelations that Bruno had 500 years ago, right, when he witnessed, we don't know how, the clear observation of right, universes upon universes and galaxies upon galaxies with no end, lighting up the entire atmosphere, right, of the observable universe and beyond. He had the vision and said, oh my God, this is so, right? And the church eventually, I mean, the church nor anyone else could take it, right? So they asked him to recant, but they didn't want to kill him because, you know, he was a likable fellow. But he simply would not recant, and so he was jailed and then, you know, burned. I mean, he was, right, he was immolated for having, for all he was able to do was see through the eyes of the Hubble a couple hundred years early.
The guy with integrity, huh?
I was going to say, what integrity? Yeah. I'd be like, universes? I didn't say anything about universes.
Yeah, if you had any sense, you'd say, oh, you know, I must have had something to eat that didn't agree with me, and we'll go, you know, 86 on the vision, and let me just go about my merry way. You don't know why someone feels like they have to defend. So impassioned. Yeah. You're like, okay, Bruno, let's go get a burger.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up. Let's just go get a burger. Leave these fuckers alone.
Fix me on the universe, yay.
Yeah. I mean, Ramana, you know, sat in a cave, the insects ate his body. He dwelled in the self. They cleaned him up. You know, he started coming out, emanating his, you know, natural radiance. And he just hung out, you know. And so an ashram basically built itself around him.
Cool.
He didn't build an ashram. He was just like, holy fuck, this is the shit. And, you know, they built an ashram around him.
Let's go in here, this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was, you know, he was remarkably radiant enough and an oddity at such a young age, right? To have gone full hog into the self in Indian culture, he was, you know, they understood that he was worth revering him, hanging out with him, right? Building. Right? They got that. They know that. I don't think they would do that here in the West. Right? I mean, if you started hanging out at Lake Galena like this.
They didn't ask you if you're okay. I've tried it. Are you okay, ma'am? Are you sure you're okay?
Right. Are you okay? What do you mean I'm fucking Ramana Maharshi. Build a goddamn ashram, you asshole.
Where's my ashram?
Really? Don't you recognize me?
I'm usually laying on the ground in a sort of like... makes them even more. Are you okay, man?
We're glad you're not in Norristown State. That's all we can say.
Yeah.
I'd much rather have you here.
Well, we'd go hang out with you at Lake Galena and feed you and stuff.
One time they were pissed because I did that in the concrete and I was laying on a truck. Sounds horrible, but they were going to call like 911, you know, and they ran in. And
you were laying on the concrete.
I was just relaxing.
Fortunately, they weren't
standing. Just wanted to relax right there, so they had to step up.
Were you in the middle of the path, the walking path?
If you're going to go into samadhi in a public place, just wear a little sign around your neck that says, don't worry, it's a hazing ritual.
I know. I thought about putting signs up or something.
Really, like,
anything.
Don't call the police, I'm okay.
Yes. It could be like, the new performance art of Doylestown.
Really?
He does it at like the bar and people are like, is he okay? Yeah. I'm like, I don't fucking know.
Don't mind him. Don't mind him. He just loves himself.
Yeah.
If you put a little
like that, I don't know.
If you put a little hat next to you with a little sign, tips please, people would run the other way.
Yeah, then you'd like, be good, right? Yeah. Put a little bottle, a little basket.
You want attention and they will totally leave you alone.
Just need to go sit in the movie, you know?
Yeah, like pretend like it's a show.
Yeah. Because that way you'd fit in with all the other bozos that want attention.
Yeah, not usually.
Not a lot of those in Doylestown. Yeah, they have to move.
David Lynch has an exhibit at the Academy of Fine Arts. Very dark. But that's what he does.
Yeah.
The sculpture garden, for example. The sculpture garden. And they had the statues and the things and the stuff. And when we were there, you know, the kids tried it. And then I saw some grown-ups, too. They were just on the bed. And they were pretending to be sculptures to see if people would come
right.
up
yeah.
and look at them or take yeah. their picture or something. So I take Jeff and Vincent to the sculpture garden.
You know they make that all.
They create no thing or whatever.
They made that all.
Watch and see me, you know, and people yeah. come up to...
They made that all family friendly.
Family friendly?
They would have, it was like the picture, you know, the painting. There was like a nude woman or a couple nude women with the other guys who were fully dressed.
They took the nudes up?
I think that they...
What are they, Donald Rumsfeld?
Yeah, and then there's the one with that nude shower.
Indian masters and
stuff. Oh, the picture. Now we're talking about the sculpture garden.
Yeah, I've got pictures of that.
Family
but
friendly.
I don't think that they have that anymore.
That was theirs.
That's what Donald Rumsfeld really? Did in the White House. He tried to put a sheet over the
naked girl in the shower.
He just couldn't handle it.
I guess not.
He's like, God, I can do it. She didn't come in with that thing.
Just what it's a, what's the format? You know, how's it going to be?
So busy.
Now I'm back to the wedding question. Do you know?
Oh my goodness.
I think in terms of the Quaker wedding, which is, you know, people just sort of...
Know what?
I'm going to marry that.
Format or
yeah.
that
do some interpretive modern dance.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to marry them while doing interpretive modern dance.
I think you should do some interpretive modern dance. That's...
I like that idea.
Oh, Lord.
Did you want to go back to what you were talking about?
What was that?
Indian masters in Samadhi or something?
Oh.
I don't know.
That's a fun topic.
Yeah.
Not doing Samadhi in public places because they don't build an ashram.
Just a hazing ritual, don't mind me.
I'm an idiot. Keep moving.
It's just really, really fun to be you and not collect anything. Mm. We do appreciate that the movement of thought and association is, you know, can be distracting. That we think that we have to utilize thought and association to entertain ourselves or get through a day. We begin to discover that that's absolutely not necessary. And that also is a little intimidating, a little startling, a little strange, if not a lot strange. You find out that you are not what you thought you were. This isn't where you think it is, nor how it came about. And you have to kind of permit your native intelligence to guide you through a reorientation.
I think it does require some action. For myself, I can get caught up in the bullshit that's going on.
Well, you're not alone in that.
And be resistant and, you know, not happy.
Yes.
And just let myself get caught up.
Yes.
But then sometimes it occurs to me, hey, I don't have to do this. I can walk away. And I do that sometimes. I put on headphones. I do that sometimes.
Yes.
There's a number of ways.
Right.
To deal with it. It's,
yeah.
God, you know, I click the mute. At least I can do that.
You use the hopefully you've been using the
codependent
volume control that I sold you the other day.
That's good. I didn't like that.
Wait, it works. It's incredible. Amazing how well it works. I should sell them. Well, here, let's say you're in a codependent kind of frenzy. You just take it out of your imaginary pocket and you just turn down the volume.
Yeah.
on yourself.
Turn down the what?
You just turn down the volume on yourself, like, there we are. Oh, that's so good. It's just like that, yeah. And this, and curiously, that you have a codependent volume control, you remember that you actually have one.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is a frenzy like nobody's business. Oh, I know. Turn it the fuck down. Oh, there we are.
I was listening to a Peter podcast today, and he was talking about, we've talked about it before, this whole idea that you're going to be neurotic free, you know.
And uh-huh.
It still seems like some of your neuroses are going to go away.
They can. Sure. Yep.
I mean, you might have, if somebody got your space, and if you're, you know,
right.
It's going to come and go pretty quickly, I imagine.
Well, again, there's no point. I get the point.
Yeah.
And I'll reply by saying that trying to frame what's going to happen to your, you know, human quirkiness.
Yeah.
In the context of this being a miraculous vacuity. It's just kind of it's a curiosity. I get the curiosity, but it's this vacuity is so completely flatlines the imagination of human that you just naturally lose interest in how you are either behaving or hoping to behave. You don't give a fuck. Because you're not even collecting yourself.
I guess I was thinking of the codependence turning down. You know?
Yeah. Well, when you're in a frenzy, you just whip it out and you just turn it down.
Yeah.
When you if you remember to, yeah. The volume control always works. I mean, it's guaranteed. When you buy one from me, it's guaranteed
Which
for life.
Which is the sophistication of awareness.
And it always works.
No?
But you simply have to remember that you have one.
Yeah, which is a fine tuning of awareness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's right.
Well, I've done the same thing using the Jesus hand or whatever,
uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
In various ways.
Sure.
So you can imagine, you know, like a wonderful sounds coming from, you know, I mean, I'm driving along and I just feel like this. You know?
People are you sure that's not like whistling
here? Yeah. Ramakrishna did it, you know?
People may wonder what I'm doing as I drive by, but who pays attention, you know?
No,
well,
you're just,
makes a difference.
You're just doing the Jesus hand.
They
only have two or three photographs of Ramakrishna, you know, and one of them he was dressed up in kind of like nice Indian Nehru outfit, and he was leaning on a column because if he didn't have the column, just you know, would have gone straight over, and it's like, you know. You know. Like, oh, all right, quick, take the photograph. I'm about to pass out.
Well, and you know, when I was a little kid, it just occurred to me right now, when I was a little kid, at some point in time, I remember seeing these pictures of Jesus, and he'd always be like this. I remember, like,
got the Jesus hand down, man.
Yeah, you got it down.
You have it about as good as Jesus.
Nice. Yeah, no, it's not easy.
Why is it always like that, you know? And I kind of practiced just to see what the deal was.
There you go.
You were doing this.
You were doing the codependent volume control.
I don't know what it was.
Yeah, I'll have to make an announcement.
Okay.
Jamie Chan channels. I'm going to have to send out a new
Jamie channels
Jamie
Jesus.
Channels
or at least
Jesus.
He channels the Jesus hand.
Jesus.
Go with it where you will.
People can pay to come and see that.
You got to perfect this thing.
I'll do a boring
Latin
shit.
Latin America. You know,
what channel of Jesus, Jamie, could you be still? Know that I'm
You're gonna do the guy.
No, it's be still and know that I'm Jamie.
Be still and know that I am Jamie.
Oh, and even his name is J&J, it works.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
How many letters Jesus gave me? Are the same letters?
That would be a good t-shirt everyone could have. Be still and know that I am Sharon.
That's pretty good.
It's the same amount of letters.
So the headphones are when you put them, or are they attached to anything?
Or are you usually on a radio head or something like that.
Lou Reed, man. Sweet Jane. Sweet Jane.
Or that song you were singing. That's what
friends are. I think our program has come to an end.
I just walk around in my head without headphones going, super geek, super anything I can add to.